Hello, everybody, and welcome back to an all-new episode, a brand spanking new episode of Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. Oh my goodness, guys, it's been so long. It's been two very, very long weeks. You know, I hate going a week without the show, and I hate doing reruns of the show. So unfortunately, it just ended up being two very quiet weeks without the show. But the good news in return of that absence is that I have so much to talk to you about. It's out of this world. I don't even know where to start. Actually, I do. I'm going to talk about that live show. Originally, I was going to have Mr. Mobat on for this week. I think we're going to be able to make it work for next week, and then, you know, he might have his own questions. But oh my goodness, we have a live show to talk about, a TV segment to talk about, an upcoming tour. A great opportunity that came my way with an American comedian, also another pretty big opportunity that came my way, with another American comedian. I have some announcements from some friends' successes that I learned about on this vacation, the vacation itself, lots to talk about. So let's just jump, right into it. Yeah, it's been 2 weeks since my first live show as a comedian. I still find it very weird to describe myself as that. It tickles me. You know, it's like this warm, feathery, pillowy feeling because it's something that it means so much to me. I don't know. I mean, it's like scary to do it. It's for me, it's scary to say that I'm a comedian because also I don't want to I've been doing it for such a short amount of time. I don't want someone who's a real comedian to come into the mix and say, well, if you're a comedian, then show me what you got. And then me show them like what I've been doing and them go, oh, well, I've been doing this for 12 years. But I think I have to just stop seeing it this way, because if someone was playing guitar for 2 years and they called themselves a guitar player, they're a musician, even if they weren't great, I wouldn't go like, well, you're not a musician because you can't play Stairway to Heaven. So maybe it's just like that. Maybe I just solved my own problem. Anyway, you know how it is when I do solo shows. I always get wrapped up in my head. It's been 2 weeks, so we got a lot to run into. Plan for the spirals, friends and fans. We have a lot of things to roll into than this live show. So let me try and pinpoint a moment to start from so I can keep myself on track. But holy cannolis, this was like the greatest. This was probably like single-handedly one of the greatest moments of my professional life, to be honest. Also, apologies for the kind of rough voice. Yesterday was my first day back in Germany, and I don't know if it's because it went from like 25 Celsius to like 8 Celsius within like an 8-hour period or something for me, but I'd lost my voice yesterday. But thankfully, it came back a little bit today, enough to at least do the podcast, which I was just itching to do. So, yeah. So, anyway, the live show. Ugh, so much prep. So much prep and time and hard work went into this. And I was just, man, I was so excited to do it. The days leading up to this live show, there's this feeling inside of me, and it was similar to this feeling I would get when I'd do music, but different in a positive way. Like before I would do important musical performances, I would have a lot of anxiety. Now that's normal. Being nervous is very normal. It's kind of weird if you're not. It means maybe you're not challenging yourself enough and stuff. Not like, you know, if you don't put yourself out on the line a little bit with a performance, then you're kind of wasting your time and the audience's time. Like, you want to really be trying to do, like, really go on, the, like, balance on the ball with one foot, so to say. And I was so nervous for the show, but different from a musical performance in the way that when I pictured myself on that stage doing comedy for the first time, oh, it just made me so happy. My whole life, I've been such a crazy fan of stand-up comedy, but I always told myself that I, because I can play music, that I, you know, the thing is, like, I don't know. I think if you're a creative person and you have a couple of different talents, so to say, it's hard to find your identity. Because in New Orleans, I was a musician in the sense that I had like four or five bands, you know, and I've had this conversation on the podcast a million times, so I don't have to dive all back into this musician identity crisis thing. But, you know, just that changeover into like the self-labeling, the internal labeling of like comedian just happened fast. And it was the live show that really helped me see that I like that. I like that title. I like that category. And it feels right. It feels good. Because I think I am a funny person. It doesn't mean necessarily that because you make your friends and family laugh that you're supposed to do it professionally. But something about making people laugh just feels so good. I think that was always easier for me than making them feel something emotional through music. Albeit, of course, you know, thankfully that has also happened, but it's harder to... The thing about being funny or whatever is that when you tell a joke that works, you get this immediate, loud proof of purchase. You get this thing of like, here's my idea, and you either get this, or you don't. And that's such a clear, black and white, interesting way to make a job, right? I mean, that's such a cool, perfectly clear understanding of what works and what doesn't. And with music, it's much more complex than that. Because music, you can have something that the general public might love, but then the intelligent sort of niche audiences will hate. Or you can make something that the niche intelligent artists will love, but then you'll never make any money because the popular audiences won't like it. And it's very complex and it's very subjective. And a joke is more or less, in general, a bit more universal. People like to laugh. And if you're funny somehow, then you can be part of that group. And here I am, rambling. Let's get back to the live show. Anyway, I was really looking forward to this, and it felt good. And it's, you know, cool to... It was getting cool to, like, call myself, like, oh, I'm going to do comedy, you know? And I played, you know, had some songs in there. So I can talk a bit about the set now more than I could before. I still don't want to tell everything because I have footage of the show, and I'm going to make clips of that, and that'll be where people can really, you know, step into the venue, and they can step into that energy. And also, I don't want to spoil too much of the show because I also am planning a tour, and I want every city to have a unique experience, and I want to create new things for each new performance so that nobody has the same thing totally twice. But anyway, that's for later in the show. So it's January 13th, and it's the day of the show. Around 2 o'clock, my friend Ben, a great guitar player, his band Moonmates and I did a song together in 2020 or 2021, I want to say. I think it was 2021, called Pieces. And I love that song. It's a song that I wrote, and then Ben reworked it into this really great, funky, emotional, cool, like Mac DeMarco style track. And yeah, I like Ben. He's a really nice guy. And Ben came over to help me, basically. He asked if he could stay at my place, and I was like, you can do that. Like, of course you can, and would you be willing to help me have like my first real merch stand, you know, as a comedian? Because I, as you guys know, as podcast fans, I have the socks now. They're not live to the public yet. There's no website where you can buy them yet, but the audience at the Milla Club was the first audience to see them and buy them, and I needed help sort of organizing everything because I really had to focus on the show. So he came by, and we were basically, you know, building these sort of dividing departments into a box where with the different sizes of socks, and then we basically built this like merch department, like a little warehouse of boxes together. and which was very nice of him and very, very helpful to me to have that kind of off my mind. And yeah, around like 4:30 or so, when we had everything put together, we went to the venue. Ben and I rode together with all the stuff in the car, and then we went to the Miller Club, which, you know, I've been to many, many times as a guest and also as a musician. So, you know, cool to step into a place I feel cozy or I feel comfortable. And we walked in with some stuff, and the hosts were very friendly. Oh, you can go here, you can stand here, do this. And then I immediately ran into the team from Bayerischer Rundfunk. Bayerischer Rundfunk. Which is kind of like saying Bavaria. What is Rundfunk, really? What is Rundfunk? What is like Rundfunk? Hold on. Like, what does that mean? What does that mean? Broadcast. Oh, Rundfunk means Bavarian broadcast.
Oh, that makes so much sense. Okay, so, yeah. So, Bayerischer Rundfunk is Bavarian broadcasting. I guess it's kind of like... I mean, I guess you could consider it like a state news outlet, although you can access it from all over the country. Maybe it's like how Fox and NBC and ABC and CBS in the States have local channels. But yeah, I guess. But I mean, the thing is, in the States, you usually have news like by the county. So you'd have like this county or this region of the state, which is much smaller networks, and BR is like a pretty big one. Anyway, for those who don't live in Germany, it doesn't matter. Basically, it's it's a German major network like ABC or CBS or something, you know, and pretty cool. And they, I met them there at the venue. And I met the host of this program. So BR has a like an artistic sort of like culture program called Capriccio. I don't know why it's called Capriccio. It's been around since like 83 or something like this. It's been around a while. And they do these cool, interesting culture interest pieces. To be honest, though, I've never seen a different one other than my own, so I can't tell you exactly what all they cover, but when I told my German friends that I was getting covered by BR, by Bayerischer Rundfunk, I just call it BR for short, that's what its like network name is, so when I told my German friends that BR Capriccio was doing a piece, they're like, oh, okay, so for me, I was like, oh, that's a good sign, because otherwise I wouldn't know. Anyway, so I met them there, and then they just immediately started filming everything. I'm, in a way, comfortable with that, and in a way not. Because at the end of the day, I'm still I'm still a dude trying to, like, set up something big here. And the thing is, I agreed to it, and was very happy to do it because the guys were so nice and the piece came out very good in the end. But, you know, in the middle of it, it's still awkward. You're still kind of more or less pretending it's not there, which is really hard to do. I was really happy that I have a history of filming myself and doing video things with other friends and having practiced that, because I think if I had never been captured before, it would be really hard to not look at the camera. I even caught myself like a couple of times at the end of a joke, like literally winking at the camera, which thank God they didn't use because it's so stupid. But anyway, and we shot so much footage that they didn't even keep. But that's how it is. You know, you shoot like 2 days worth of footage, and then the whole thing at the end is like 6 minutes. Pretty crazy. What I will do, by the way, just because I just reminded myself, I'm gonna pull it up right now. The Capriccio piece right now. Again, scatterbrained, deal with it. And it is gonna be, I'm gonna put it right here. Jordan's ARD Media. No. It is, and this is the confusing thing about German media, is like it's a BR production for their program Capriccio, but it's in the ARD MediaTek. So I don't know what that means. Jordan's Capriccio piece in full for free. Click here. Yes, you're listening to me. Put the link literally in the description as I do this. Okay, there it is. So you can now go to the show notes of this episode, and right under the description of what I'm going to talk about is Jordan's Capriccio piece. You can watch it, right? You can pause it and go watch it right now. If you haven't, you can watch it in the States. You can watch it anywhere. It's for free. You don't have to make an account or anything. You just watch it. That's pretty cool. And then, you can come back. So I'll wait. Psych, we're not waiting. Okay, so anyway, guys, I met them there. They started filming. It was pretty awkward at first, but then I just had so much to focus on that I got used to it. And thankfully, I had been in contact with the host of that show, Maximilian, very German, for a little while. And yeah, very nice guy. And, you know, he had really thoughtful, interesting questions. And what I liked about him a lot, which I found out more the second day in the post-show interview, was that he was someone who's like very sweet and very kind, but was not afraid to go deep. You know, like he would be somebody who would, he was somebody who could be very complimentary and laugh really hard at something I'd say, and then ask a question that has so many layers to it about, like, you know how there's some people in your life, I don't know if maybe I'm this person for some of my friends, but, or family, but there's some people who can be really sympathetic and like funny, and then they, man, the house is so loud right now. I'm so sorry, but I don't want to stop recording. I think I can hear someone's phone. But you know what? I just don't want to stop recording. I have a certain time frame today, and it's just going to be raw. I think I might be this person for some people, but there's like this silly humorous thing, like this, as the Germans would say, like sympathisch thing. But then we'll like flip the script and get super philosophical. Like this guy was so sweet, Max, about like asking a question that somehow, in a way, tied into like the human condition, which is one of my favorite things to sit and think about. So that was always cool. And then he would always stop himself and say, I don't know if that's too, you know, too deep or too, like, he would always stop himself, like maybe he's being too, you know, big headed or maybe like getting ahead of himself or something. And that was really sweet. Like the humility of him thinking that this question, which has so many layers to it, is maybe too much to ask for something like this. And I would always stop him and say, no, it's good. It's fun. I like this. And, you know, whatever. In the end, you know, we didn't even really use those things. So maybe in the editing bay, he was like, ugh, this isn't really capturing the story we want to tell anyway. But that's not the point. That's not the point. Again, 2 weeks, man. Welcome to the ramble zone. Yeah. So very sweet guy. It was a 3-person team, and they were just kind of there. So we're at the venue. Ben very kindly set up this beautiful merch setup. Like, I just wish I had him with me for all these shows I'm going to do later this year, because wow, you know, doing that stuff alone sucks. And I remember I've been on so many gigs as a musician touring alone or with like a 2-3-person group. And just, you know, sound checking and then just standing there at a table and organizing your albums and your posters or whatever and having like a bag with some cash in it. And it just kind of sucks. It just like kills the magic. You know, just at the end, you're reminding yourself, like, I just got to make a little money. And there might be a guarantee from the door or something, but you're still trying to like build an audience. You know, you're still trying to get like a foot in the door. And if you're touring with a bigger artist, you're going to get like, oh man, that's so, I'm so sorry. You're going to get like, 10% of the table that they share. It's like usually it's like one merch counter. It's usually like, something by the bar or whatever. But it depends. It depends. And I've almost always been lucky enough to, at bigger shows at least, have a friend who will, you know, I'll still set it up, but I'll have a friend who will volunteer to stand there. And the first and maybe the only show that I can remember as a musician where I felt like the merch table did what it's supposed to do is when I opened up for Jose Gonzalez back in November at the Mufarhalle. I talked about that on this show too. That was a great experience. And that show was great for me because it was a big audience. I think I played very well with my friend, Marcus. I don't say that often. I don't have a lot of doubt with my musical ability, but, I think I played very well. And I think Marcus played well. And the cool thing was it was such a big audience that, you know, if they wanted to go to the bathroom or get a drink or something, some people even bought merch from the table before I was done, and I'm the opening act, and that's just not that common. So that was a really cool feeling, and that was kind of, excuse me, I'm burping like crazy. That was kind of the feeling I got from this comedy show, that like, oh, the merch table is like, it's working, you know. But it was in like a whole new context. I was the main act. There was no support act. It was just like an hour and 10 minutes of just pure alone connection with this audience. And Ben set this beautiful table up, and we sold so much stuff. It was, I mean, more than I've sold before. You know, it wasn't like we sold out of everything, but it was such a good start. And so we have some, I'm sorry. Okay, I have to slow down. We got in. I met the sound tech. Ben was setting up the table. The BR Capriccio guys are there. They're filming everything. It's just sort of, you know, they're just kind of capturing all the pre-show stuff. I sound check. I have two microphones. So you'll see this when I get the clips ready. I had one microphone that was just my stand-up mic, which I hadn't really practiced. I've practiced having a microphone at home. So here in this little studio, I have some monitors, and I have a couple of different microphones. And so I put in this this Shure, like 58A, I don't know, Beta A, something like that. And it's more of like a stage mic. And I sort of practiced how I wanted to kind of see how it would work. You know, there's so many different comics that I watch pretty religiously, and I tend to see how they use their microphones, because it's also a sort of a thing to do with your hands. It's a way to stay sort of grounded to the stage and to sort of, you know, it's like equivalent to tapping your foot or scratching your neck. It's like using the cable or not having a cable. I don't understand how comedians like Ricky Gervais just have a headset. For me, that seems so naked, seems so bare. Some comics, I think I've seen it with, who am I thinking of? I don't know who I'm thinking of. I've seen some comics who have a wireless microphone, just holding it still. But I also don't like that because it's, again, a bit naked and it's unreliable. These wireless mics, more often than not, can cut out. So I like the old-fashioned microphone, you know, the Jerry Seinfeld thing, you know, popping the microphone out of the stand, having the cable. And on stage, it was interesting for me to kind of view myself outside of myself and see me, like, how I held it, how I, like, sometimes I would pull the cable up and wrap it in sort of a circle around my left hand as I held it in my right hand. And it just kind of gave me this sort of like shield, like this is my fidget spinner, you know? So I sound checked that mic, and then I had a separate microphone for just playing the songs. And we had a projector. And I forget that Mila is kind of a small stage, actually. When I've played there with bands, it felt bigger somehow because everything's open. But also the problem with that venue, although I'm very happy that I did my first show there because it was kind of like a homecoming in a sense. But the problem is that the sound on stage is pretty tough, because the thing is it's a cave. I mean, it's literally like this weird rock cave concrete thing. So you always have this weird sort of tone or feedback. Drummers hate that place. And I probably could have chosen a place that had seating. Again, you have to imagine, like, with music, I talked about this 2 weeks ago with Mo, but like, with music, of course you're standing because you're going to bob around. You might even dance. But for comedy, it's never standing room only. very rarely, maybe in like an underground surprise show or something. But it was just like this weird sound. And then, I don't know, I got a little anxious that maybe it was too buzzy or whatever. So I got in my head, but everything in the end worked out fine. But the stage did feel a bit small to me at the end, because you had this big projector that came down. Then we had issues getting the projector to be clear or to fit the projector properly. But I really needed it because I think in the end, I'll probably end up omitting this projector completely, unless I end up having some big show. Like, you know, if I have some big end of the year tour finale, as in like making a special, like for YouTube or something, that I would have filmed myself, then maybe then I'll bring it back. But I think for the future shows, I might not rely on it, because although some of the images I'm very happy with, I think some of the images are very funny. I think it's not good. It's not going to always work the same in every venue. Like unless I brought my own 4K projector and my own drop down screen and set everything up myself, I can't trust that every venue is going to be able to support that tech. And even though Mila in the end worked out fine, still, you know, the screen wasn't big enough, I think, for the people standing in the back, and it wasn't bright enough, and I didn't find it to be clear enough. And it worked good, I think, for the first like stretch of audience. And I think on video, when we make the clips, it's going to look great. But yeah, you know, it's just an added support system that in the end, maybe I don't need it all, because in the end, it's the storytelling and the jokes that people will, you know, remember. But hopefully. But anyway, we soundchecked those two mics and ran through some of the projection slides. And I told the sound lady, Hannah, I think, who was very nice about, you know, this intro song that I wanted to come out to. I think I can show you really quick. It's also featured in the BR Capriccio show. But when I came out to the stage, I came out to this. And then I opened the curtains right here. Oh man, I loved it. It was such a cool song. That is Soulful Strut by Young Holt Unlimited. It's a great, great, great funky soul track. Man, I loved coming out to that song. I heard, you know, it was such a last minute choice too, because I had some ideas of what I would enter the stage with. And that song just appeared in some Instagram video. It was like some advertisement for something. And I saw it and I just thought, oh, that's so perfect. It hits the nail on the head of this positive, funny energy. Like, it's like a good time song. It's groovy. And it also kind of touches this New Orleans strut. You know, this like, I don't know. It just kind of felt like that's perfect. That has to be it. So we soundchecked all that stuff, ran through it. And then, yeah. And then before the downtime, which for me is the worst, like the downtime before a show starts is the absolute worst, because I'm so nervous and I'm so unsure of myself, and I have all this time to just like convince myself that it's not going to go well. So it really sucks. At the same time, I don't want to be too busy, like that I can't calm down. It's a weird time. I feel it's like such an anxiety bomb. And just before that, a journalist, this woman from the Süddeutsche Zeitung, which is the South German paper, also wanted to come ask me a few questions, but she was very nice, but I just wasn't so communicative. Like, I feel like we had a few good answers, but it was like, you know, just a couple hours before showtime and BR was already there. And I wanted her to come in and have a good time and see the show, of course, for her article. But, I just didn't really get to talk to her after, and we've been texting a bit. I sent her some images, and we're supposed to have a conversation, I guess, later in February or something. But anyway, I had all these, you know, it was just like so much pressure. I also knew, like, I had, so, you know, I had this TV network there. I had this newspaper journalist there. The show was my first sold-out show ever. A lot of pressure there to bring it down, bring down the house. It was my first comedy show. I was relying on tech that I wasn't sure of. I wasn't sure how the things would perform. But still, you had this sort of like supportive reminder from lots of people that, you know, you had this reminder constantly of like, these people are like, they really want to see you. You know, like you have this fan group you've built and they're coming to see you because they love you. So it's almost this, also the security of like, okay, the bar is like actually kind of low. I'm going to do a good job. I've really worked hard on this, and I think they'll be pleasantly surprised, but I don't have to be so scared. And although my heart was just pounding before showtime, I did actually have a little chance, and I'm so glad the BR didn't see this, but I had a little chance by myself to look in the mirror of this in the backstage, and it's so cheesy, but I told myself, like, it's all right. They already like you. You don't have anything to prove, because with music, you've got so much to prove. You have to prove yourself constantly that you're a good musician, that you're a good songwriter, that every note that you sing is perfect, that you look cool or whatever. And with comedy, you're really just like, the more honest you are about yourself, the more people like you. So the fact that they already came, they already sold out in like 2 hours because they like you, just takes this extra pressure off. Oh, it was just such a good thing to have that thought just before showtime. And then I had like maybe 1-2 beers before, just to kind of smooth off. I had dinner with my cameraman Tim Henkel and his girlfriend and Ben, and then I think it was just like 1 hour before showtime, I sort of just, there's this in the backstage of this club, like, so if you're looking at the stage, there's stairs that go from literally the first, like, where the stage stops all the way to like, it kind of goes up on an incline. That's like, the stage has 2 layers. There's like the first platform you can stand as the audience and look at. You're like looking at my knees or something. And then behind me, there's one more layer. And this is how they kind of stack bands. Like, okay, you know, there's like 4 levels. And then past that, the stairs go up to a big curtain. And then behind the curtain is the backstage, which is kind of cool, but also makes it tricky to try and get in and out of the place, you know, nonchalantly. And the backstage is so nasty. I forgot that it's just like every corner of the room is written with marker and stinks of cigarettes and everything's sticky and whatever. It's such a rock venue place. And there's a little fridge with like a few beers and some water and stuff. And if you're in the backstage, then there's this like stairwell that goes up one whole floor up back to the ground level where the street is, because the venue is kind of underground, which is also cool. But it goes out to the ground. It goes up to the ground floor. There's a door out to the street, like a fire exit. And next to that's a bathroom. And after we had dinner, everyone kind of split off. Like the camera guy had things to prep. Ben was guarding the money and the merch table. And I was by myself before the BR guys came back. And I was standing there in the stairwell in the dark, because there's like motion sensor lights. I stood in this spot where the motions wouldn't see me. And I just like speed ran the whole show. And I was like, I have to make sure that I'm going to get this. Okay, this story, that connects to, and then I was like, that connects to, okay, and then it's this picture. And I ran the whole thing. And then I like stress pooped. The fastest I've ever stress pooped. And then I heard a voice in the hallway like, Jordan? And I flushed and washed my hands and came out, and it was the BR host. It was like 15 minutes before showtime. And he's like, yeah, I just wanted to come back and get some of that pre-show energy. Like, how are you feeling? And I know it looks good on camera, and I know that's important for their piece to get that, but that is the last thing that I wanted. But also it was kind of good because it was a distraction. So, you know, I got to just get over it, because it came out fine in the end. But man, those last like 10 minutes, I'm looking out of the curtain. I had made a discussion with the tech girl and I said, you know, if the crowd looks full, let's start at 8 on the dot. If you think it can wait a little longer, let's start at 8:05, but no later. And I was like, from 7:58, I will be here by this curtain waiting for my cue, which is that song I showed you. And that's what I did. It was like 7:55. I stretched a little bit and then had put a water in my pocket. And then I just kind of like, man, my heart was like, I've never, oh God, that heartbeat is just like the worst feeling. I was so nervous. Oh. And then, yeah, he asked me a few questions. You know, how are you feeling now? And are you nervous? And blah, blah, blah. And I spoke actually with them a little bit in German because they asked, but they never used any of it. I guess my German's just not that good. but yeah, then I heard the intro, that dun, dun, dun. Oh, and my heart was pounding like crazy. And I stood at the curtain. I had the water in my back pocket. I had my notes prepared on the stage. Everything was ready. Put my hands, like, I laced the back of my fingers together right where the curtain merges. And then when it goes, ba-da-da-da, I just peeled it and was, I just went out to this full audience, completely unsure how this would go. So excited, though. There was, you know, like I said before, the network, the magazine, the newspaper. There was also, like, some people there that I needed this to go well for. I've mentioned, like, briefly, as much as I can, about possibly developing something like with TV people, and some of those TV people were there, and I was very, very nervous to make sure they knew that I was like a good brand they could rely on. And at the end, I was very glad they were there because I think it went very well. But yeah, in all transparency, like the first probably 20 minutes, I was so nervous. I was so nervous, and my voice was shaky, and my mouth was dry, and I was kind of like, I like hopped over something, you know, like when you're memorizing like a play or something, you're kind of memorizing these beats, these word beats, and if you jump over one to the next one, it might not mess up how it sounds, but it'll mess up your flow, like your memory beat. And in the first 20 minutes, I did that a lot. I would like hop over something where the story still made sense. It was fine. But then I couldn't, but then I was like, oh, but I didn't say that. And that's going to be important for the, and then I'd have to kind of like repeat it and make it sound natural, but it didn't sound so natural. So I think those first 15 or 20 minutes are pretty shaky, but I, you know, the thing was people were still so receptive. I mean, people were so, so receptive. I really still can't believe it. Like, I'm so grateful for that. It was just the most amazing. It was just one of those things where, like, this was the kind of experience I had always hoped for. Always, always, you know, with music. And it was just, like, the most amazing feeling to stand there just bare, just like me in this audience, and tell jokes, and just to feel this like this room laughter. And I just couldn't believe it. And there were some surprises, of course, like a couple of jokes. It's very common, of course, that, you know, there's some jokes that you think will work and some don't. That's just stand up. But there were some jokes I thought were kind of like Passover jokes, like these little breezy, little simple one-liners that I would use to, I would just like kind of throw it out there and to get to the next, what I thought was like the next big joke. And these, sometimes I would have to wait. I mean, this is crazy, right? It would be like a little throwaway joke about something Germans do, whatever, or something I felt as a teenager. And then it would be such a big laugh, I'd actually have to wait and kind of stay in the moment, stay in the bit until the next segment sort of made sense to move on. And for me, that was so crazy. Like, whoa, okay. I didn't expect that one to work. That's cool. I didn't expect that one, you know? So that was always really a nice surprise too. And the projector, everything worked out great, you know, like timing the images out, telling the story. I think after those 20 minutes, like basically up until the first 15 or 20, I think it's pretty shaky, pretty nervous, but still, you know, receptive. People are still, no one's like so nervous, or no one's like so aware of the nervousness that they don't laugh. Like when you can like feel so bad for someone that you don't laugh. I don't know if that makes sense, but like if you see someone really being shaky, you might be too like hesitant or something, but they were so receptive that I think for me it was still really good. I'm not so worried about it. And then what ended up being a funny thing I didn't expect was, you know, for years my safety point was behind the guitar. And at this show, for the first time in my life, being behind the guitar is what made me more nervous. Because when I was just doing my stories and just doing my practiced, rehearsed sort of like, I have these like segments and the segments have stories and within the stories there are jokes and they all thread together in this very specific way. And when I was doing that, just me and a mic and the audience and feeling that laughter, man, like I didn't want to play songs. I mean, I don't think this is going to lead into me like not wanting to do music anymore. I have a lot of things I really want to do with music, but it was so crazy. In the first 15 or 20 minutes, around 15, 20, I have a song and I played that song so nervously. It's even featured in the Capriccio piece. If you watch it in the show notes, there's a song they show me playing. That's my first song. That's like 15, 20 minutes in. It's a song for my friend Cody. And I'm so nervous playing that song that you can hear it in my voice. You can hear how shaky and soft it is. And maybe some people don't hear that. But for me, it's like, oh my God, I can't believe they used that, because they should have used the second song or the final song. I had all the confidence in the world. I wish they'd used that, you know? But after that first song, then I'm in the flow, right? Then I'm back. I've got the mic. The story's flowing. I only had to check my set list, my notes like once or twice tops. And that was really good for my first show, I thought. And it was so funny. I was so much more confident standing there with just a microphone than I was when it was time to play a song. And I just never expected that in a million years. I thought I would be nervous and a little scared every time I'm telling jokes. And then when I would do a song, I could take a break. But it was the opposite. Once I finished that first song, I didn't want to play the other songs anymore. I just wanted to keep making them laugh. So I think that's a good sign that I'm on to something that's like really going to make me happy. I think that's crazy how it's just so unexpected. But yeah, I mean, just to wrap up the live show thing, it was just, the audience was incredible, very receptive. After that first 20 minutes, I think things really picked up. The story and the pacing and everything kind of slowed down, where you could really drink in each word and each, you know, inflection, the way that it should work, the way that I wanted it to work. And I was very, very happy with it at the end. I even got everyone on the stage to say like, hello, mom and dad on a video, because I had to show them what it looks like from the stage, because there's just no way you could believe that. I was really happy that I got to show that to my parents and just to give them a glimpse of like what's happening here. And yeah, then the show ended and I went backstage. I told everybody like, hey, after this, thank you so much. I'm going to go backstage. I'm going to cool down for a few minutes and then I'm going to go to the merch table. And then if you want to come over and say hi and take a picture, I'm happy to do that. And this is where like the reality of the fan base really clicked for me. Like, yes, sold out show. Yes, very receptive. But still, like, that's all fun. Like, people want to go out and have fun. For me, that's like, yeah, I'm really glad that happened. And to an extent, understandable. But this is where, like, the craziness kicked in for me. I went backstage. I cooled down. My camera guy came back. We hugged. We were setting up, like, the footage to put onto a drive to send to my editor. Like, all the sort of, like, you know, boring stuff. And then, you know, taking a breath, having a drink. And then it was time. And I went back down the stage, grabbed all my stuff off because they had to clear out the stage for a DJ set like at midnight or something. And then I went to the merch table and Ben was very receptive and sweet and like congratulated me. And I stood there and I saw that like some stuff had been sold already. That was a good feeling. And then a lot of couples, like groups of three or four, but a lot of couples waited like I was I was standing at the merch table talking with and taking photos with these fans for like over 90 minutes. Like the last couple that I talked with and had a photo with had been in that line for a little over an hour and a half. That is crazy. And that's when it really, like halfway through this line of people, and they were so patient. Everybody was nice. Everybody was sweet. You know, it was like, I realized, oh, I've actually got like really good people on this follower, in this follower base. Like I've got really good people that are, you know, patient and sweet and just happy to be there. And that means so much to me. It shows me a lot about like the kind of reception that my stuff is getting. And I don't know, like kind of made my heart explode. People wanted me to sign the socks or sign the posters. And I just loved it so much. Yeah, I can't believe they waited that long. That's so crazy. Yeah. And then it was over. And then we, me and some friends all, you know, and Ify and everybody, we went backstage, had one more drink, then it was time to go. And before you knew it, we were back home. And I was just really happy to see that be our Capriccio piece, because I could kind of relive it a bit, because immediately after it was all done, we flew to the Canary Islands. And that's where we take this story.
That's right. So, you know, you have the show, and then you have just one day. I hadn't packed anything. I'm meeting up with the BR Capriccio guys. We do a post-show interview at this cowboy club, which is so funny. It's such a classic, like, hey, you're an American. Would you like to do your interview at this barn with horses? Because, you know, giddy up, cowboy. And there was, like, Native American statues and stuff. It just blew my mind. But we did this post-show interview there, and they talked a bit about, like, how I got started, which isn't that long ago. So it's just a funny thing. We shot there, very nice guys, very sweet. They really respected my time frame. I had a really strict, I had a really strict time frame that I had to leave because I was tired and hungover, and I also hadn't packed anything for a two-week trip to the Canary Islands, which is a big thing to take on. So, yeah, I left and left the, you know, the project in their hands, and I knew that it would come out while I was on the island. And this is the thing, is like, whilst on Las Palmas, so many things came to light. So much information happened that it's really insane, actually. So if you think about it, it's, you know, two families, you know, we got four adults and on this big trip. And, oh, it's an early start. I think everybody was getting up around like 4:30 in the morning on the Monday. So, you know, the Sunday for me is very short time frame. Everyone's tired. House is a mess. I've got to throw together 2 weeks of clothes. And it's weird to be in January on the 14th and packing for pretty warm weather, like weather in this, I think in Fahrenheit, it's like the 70s, late, you know, high 70s or something. It's insane. So I'm packing bathing suits, a bunch of t-shirts, you know, some Birkenstock. It just feels like wrong. I throw it all together and eventually it's good to go. And then we, you know, try and get to bed at like, I don't know, like 8, just to try and get enough sleep somehow. Of course it didn't work, you know, get like 4 hours. Wake up 4:30. And then basically for me, when I am traveling, even by myself, the going to sleep part the day before until I am through security at the airport the next day, from that stretch of time, I am internally a mess. I hate that part. From then on, I'm great, especially if I'm flying by myself. God, I love that. Like in June of last year, going to Amsterdam for Tony's Chocolonely, what a great experience. You know, like, yeah, sure, I hate getting to the airport. Because I'm so scared that I don't have enough time. So I'm there like 2-3 hours early. I mean, for flights, you should always be about 2 hours early. But I was there like, I don't know, 3 hours early. I just get so anxious. Security, I always think like, oh, they're going to find that knife that was embedded in my shoulder when I was asleep. You know, they're going to find that heroin that I put under my hat. It's like so wild. Of course, everything always goes fine. And then when I'm through security, I'm good to go. Then I'm calm. Then it's like, oh, I can make Instagram stories. I'm listening to music. I've got a skip in my step. Oh, let's go buy a croissant. Let's go buy a coffee. Let's buy a Coca-Cola. And then getting on the plane. Like, then if I'm traveling by myself, it's like, maybe I have just a backpack with me. Ooh, that's a nice feeling. No suitcase to drag around. It's the best. But that's not how this trip went. Big suitcases, lot of bags, all this stuff, you know the drill. And finally, getting things checked in, still all this stuff to carry, all this weight, all this noise. It's just it's so exhausting, you know, and it's like 6 a.m. and there's like tension and we took the wrong exit and the escalator isn't working and all, blah, blah, blah. What am I complaining for? I just had a sold-out show, and I'm on the way to a holiday in January, right? So we tough it out, finally get to the plane. Plane ride's fine. Get there, and boom. Then I'm in a foreign, pretty exotic foreign place. Our friends, friend of the show, Moritz, and his lovely wife, Johanna, had been there the previous year. They had invited us to come join them this time. And it was just so magical. I mean, they kept saying that it reminded them of Jurassic Park. And constantly when you would kind of go through the these roads that they had carved out, you know, like the whole thing was, it's hard to explain. Basically, you land in this city, like Las Palmas, by this plane. It's like a 6 hour, 5 or 6 hour flight from Munich. And then you have to take this like 1 hour bus ride to this very remote villa area. So really isolated, very much like, you know, where you imagine like the characters of Lost would find some sort of secret hut in the woods or where they crashed at the end of Triangle of Sadness or something. It's just like this really remote sort of area. And even though kind of throughout these large cavernous mountainsides around you, through the palm trees and everything, you can still see this like road, and sometimes there's 18 wheelers going by and stuff. So you feel that you're not completely disconnected from society, which I think is good. It's nice to feel like, okay, like if something happened here, it wouldn't be impossible to get to us, you know? There's still cell service, there's still Wi-Fi, you know? So that was kind of comforting for my big pampered white ass. but you know, it's funny doing things like this, like going to the Canary Islands in January is one of the most German things you could possibly ever do. So I tried to convince myself that I did it for research, but I still couldn't get it out of my head that I was like, everyone here just thinks I'm just another one of the germs, you know? And I went with a group of Germans. But at the end of the day, you know, I have to get that stereotype out of my head because it was really, really fun. And I think a lot of people have the assumption that it's only white, boring old Germans that go there. It was so nice, and I really recommend it, and I would definitely do it again. Good group to travel with, and also just a beautiful place. Let me backtrack a bit, though. I got carried away. Surprise. But anyway, the thing is, you land, and then you take this long bus around these curvy, sort of nausea-inducing mountainous turns. Finally, you land at this, you stop at this like little entranceway. There's a guy who greets you, takes all your luggage, puts it in this cart. And then from then on out, all transportation, unless you leave that area by taxi, all transportation is either by foot or on a golf cart, which is super fun. And they're all electric, so they're super quiet, and they kind of zip around these little corners. And yeah, like I said, it's like Jurassic Park. You go down and there's like, you know, everything feels so ancient and prehistoric. These giant boulders, open valleys, tall mountains of like dirt and grass, palm trees, rickety sort of like man-made fenced off little tunnels you drive through, and you're like, da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. You just feel this like ancient history somehow unfolding around you. It's so cool. It feels like untouched territory. And then you get to this area where there's a big tennis court that's like half basketball court. They have a gym. I didn't even get to use the gym or any of like the athletic stuff except for the basketball goal, but that was still fun to like relive childhood basketball. I played a lot of basketball with my friend Mort, so that was really fun. And you get there, and then, you know, to the left of that, there's all the sort of, you could call them sort of apartments or like mini houses. Very modernized. So it's not like you're walking into like a third world country at all. I didn't know what to expect. When I travel to things like this, I like to not look at photos. I actually consciously just don't look it up, and I like let myself forget about what it might be like because I like to be surprised. And yeah, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't think it would be, you know, like going in the middle of nowhere. But I was pleasantly surprised that it wasn't like that. It was still like remote enough that you felt like you're in paradise. No one knows where you are, but you're still connected enough to society that, you know, if I get some emails and stuff or some work, or whatever, I can still do it. And that happened, and that was still nice. And you have these little like house apartment things. You have, you know, some places have, you know, 1, 2, 3 bedrooms, kitchen, you know, living room. It's like little apartments. And you have, there's a community pool that was very nice. It was heated. The whole place was kind of, a lot of it was like covered in this sort of fake grass that I grew to love because it was constantly flush and full and felt very soft and comfortable on my feet. And I don't know, it sounds silly, but I just, when you're like outside the pool standing on this grass, they probably can't grow thick grass like that there, but they have this sort of faux grass that you'd imagine on a golf course. Like that kind of soft, very fine straw-like grass. And it was just so soft. I just really learned to love it. And yeah, there's a pool and a little shower area, you know, because you would probably be coming from the beach. There's also, you can take this path down, this like a little baby hike sort of to this gate that opens up to the ocean, to the Atlantic Ocean. And I don't know that I can do a 2-hour episode today. I don't think I have the time. Maybe it's a 2-parter, but man, so much to tell from this ocean. There was my first experience with black sand. So cool. It was very like rocky, but in a cool way, not in a way that was like, you know, there was one part of the beach you could see from the petting zoo, like farm animal part of the villa, which there was like a gated area with a cute donkey named Margarita that you could pet and you could feed, and goats and stuff. That was really cool. Oh man, all the families, all the kids, they loved that. And from that part of the sort of mini town they built, you could look over and see this other part of the beach that was all rocks, like no sand at all. From the cliffside to the coast of the water, just all these big rocks. That would be very unappealing for me. I have a whole thing with like, I don't know, I've always had like foot sense. I've always had like a kind of a like bad feet, like just very sensitive to gravel or hard surfaces. So that always turns me off. Like, I don't know if I could do that without like some water shoes or something like that. But the part that we went to was so magical, like big, like people had just done it over time, but people had moved these rocks into these really cozy nooks. So you would sit in like this big circle of the rocks that was just full of sand. You could lay some towels down, put an umbrella down, get some shade, put on some sunblock, and then you could walk to the beach and feel that Atlantic Ocean just like wash over your ankles. And sometimes the waves would be so big and it was so exciting. And then you could go to this one corner of the beach where these big boulder rocks had been left. And in that particular spot was the biggest group of fat, red, blue-spotted crabs. I've never seen that before. It was like stepping into a David Attenborough documentary or like National Geographic. That was so cool to stand there and see these enormous crabs just in their natural habitat. You know, they would see you pretty far away. If you moved closer to take a look, they'd see you pretty fast and like scurry a little bit like these big hard-shelled spiders. They look so spooky, and like I really thought they look like spiders, like these big ocean bugs. I never thought about that before until then. But yeah, that ocean area is was just gorgeous and very peaceful. I had some funny experiences there. I wonder if I should save that for the next episode. Probably I should, because that's really funny. I think it'd be funny to tell that to Mo if he's on the next one. So I'll put a note to remind myself of the Atlantic Ocean experiences. Big things like physically happened to me there that were very funny now, but intense in the moment. And then, so the news. Okay, so, you know, we're at this beautiful villa area, nice staff, petting zoo, golf carts, palm trees, just like this crazy escape from the real world. And amongst all of this comes the wildest information. Like, the craziest stuff comes our way. So one is the BR Capriccio show airs on like German television and online, which is so cool. Again, the link is in the show notes. You can watch it for free. That airs. We all watch it. It's a really cool experience to share that and to hear what people think in the moment and to send it to all my friends and family. I get the footage of the live show, and I still can't get the clips done yet. I had to send off the drive, but that's coming, so you'll have that soon. But it was nice to like be able to watch some of it and like relive some moments. And so this is where things get pretty crazy. So I'll tell you the things that happened to the people I was with, and then end with the crazy things coming my way. So one is, Efi might have like 4 projects coming in the next months, which is a huge, huge, huge break. There was like a, you know, kind of a tough time. We had sort of an imbalance with work and stuff, just how it goes when you're freelancing. And within that trip, all these potential, you know, it's not confirmed 100%. We have to, you know, still stay cool, but 4 opportunities are on the table, and that would be really, really great. So that's good news. Our friend Johanna had a big film project greenlit, which means that it's a go, it's going to happen, and she's riding on it, and that's just a huge, huge opportunity. That's very, very cool. And our friend Moritz, of course, big friend of the show, he wrote the first season of the reboot of this famous German children's television show called Pumuckl. Moritz, forgive me if I'm setting that up incorrectly, but it's, you know, there's a reboot of this very, very famous book and children's show, and he had sort of like the pressure of the German nostalgia on his shoulders, and he really delivered, and it's the biggest success for this production company and for this network in a long time. It's a huge hit. Critics love it. Fans love it. He just did a great job and has been nominated because of this show for one of the most prestigious awards you can be nominated for in that industry. It's the Grimme, G-R-I-M-M-E. He's been nominated for that. I don't know when it gets announced. I've asked, but I keep forgetting. But when it's time for that, it's going to be amazing. Like, we find out that he's nominated for the Grimme Prize, which is, it's like, you know, like a, I think we found out it's not like a Pulitzer, but it's like, what do you call it? Like, some sort of like, maybe it's more like a Pulitzer. Yeah, it's something like a very prestigious honor kind of award, like career changer, you know, and he really deserves it. The show is great. Even as a non-native who doesn't know the show before this, like, I loved what I saw, and it was very successful. He's the guy also who wrote this film. For those who have listened to the show for a while, there's a film that I can't talk too much about, but I worked on that Moritz wrote, and that's also so good. Can't wait to see that. Okay, so then we find out that he's nominated, and within like a day or two, after like finding out the good news for Efi, and then my show coming out, and then him getting nominated, then, and Johanna getting greenlit, we find out that the Bavarian Film Prize show is coming on, which is like, you know, like, yeah, Bavarian Film Awards is like a big, like Golden Globe style thing for film here in Bavaria, obviously. And our friend, one of Moritz's best friends, who I'm very grateful that came to the live show, and someone who we have had as a guest on this podcast twice, Ali Reza Golafshan, Ali himself from The Goldfisher and Yod Ke'ah, these great comedies. He won, I think it was Best Director. Moritz will have to send me notes for corrections on the next. I think it was Best Director for his upcoming film, which is amazing. I think it's his second time winning a big Bavarian Film Prize. So shout out and congrats to our former guest and friend of the show, Ali. And it was very cool for Moritz because he worked with the host of that show to surprise Ali in a cinema with his award. So Moritz was on national television and was nominated and got to be like supportive for his friend on TV. And it was so sweet and so cool. And all of this stuff is coming together, which leads to the last bit of news I'll tell you, which is really crazy. So one is my friend Giovanni is in a techno, it sounds funny to start it like this. My friend Giovanni is a good buddy of mine, and he has a techno group that has a manager, and the manager has done really like wonderful things for him. He's also the guy who has connected me with my influencer agency. So he's a good guy, he's young and he's a hard worker and he means business. And his name is John. And John has, I told him about the sold out show at the Milla, and that we, you know, I wanted to make a tour, and immediately started getting to work for me, like as a friend, you know, as someone who's close with him and Giovanni, and was immediately like, hey, I'm going to set you up with a big booking agency in Germany. We're going to get you a tour. And he started immediately sending me info, like, how many stops do you want? What kind of requirements do you need? Da, 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 da. I was like, oh my God. So within this trip, I found out that like, he's working with this big agency and we're going to get like 6 to 8 stops lined up. And he's having a meeting with them this week to finalize things. And then I'm going to be in contact with someone from the agency to go on from there, which is huge. That's like my dream to do. You know, we're planning shows in Berlin and Hamburg. I might even do like an end of the year bigger show in Munich when I've added more to the show to do something a bit new, you know? So I can't talk too much about that, but it'll be like 6 or 8, stops in Germany, as a tour, which is really cool. My first comedy tour. And in addition to that, the two craziest things is while that was being set up with John and his agency he's talking to, I was hit up by a different German booking agency, which also does big events. Again, these people, I don't know these agencies, you know, so I had to kind of look them up to know what's going on. But this other agency contacted me.
You probably wouldn't notice it if I didn't say it, but I just had to take a little pause there. I just realized I was so shaky. It was so cold here in the studio. I had to like put on a hoodie and a hat and turn the heater on. Yeah, so this other agency contacted me, and I kind of still want to leave all the agency names out until things are confirmed, but they wrote me out of the blue, and they said, we like your videos, we've been following you for a while, and there's a comedian who I'm a fan of. This one's, you know, not for mom, but this is a comedian who's very funny. His name is Matteo Lane, and he's performing in Cologne later this year here in Germany. And they asked if maybe I would want to be, you know, the opening act, which is kind of a huge deal. I think that is, you know, more beneficial to me than opening up for someone like Jose Gonzalez. I think when you go to see a musician, I don't know, I think going to see comedy, I think maybe the audience is a bit more open to, you know, getting, I don't know, they're more receptive to like hearing from someone they don't know. And as an opening act for musicians, it's very hard. You have to be, it has to be kind of a lucky night, a good mood. You have to play your best and then hope at the end they're like, wow, that was great. But it's just, you know, they go there to see the band and you're the band that kind of entertains them until that starts. It's just kind of the game. I've had only a few experiences where it was like really great to be the opening act. But for comedy, for some reason, that just doesn't feel to me, I mean, again, I'm a little virgin, little comedy baby, so maybe I'm going to learn my lesson with this. But being asked to potentially, again, not 100% confirmed, but it looks good for now, getting asked to open up for a comedian that, one, is very, like, doing very well in the States, connected to lots of comedians, including himself, of course, like, lots of comedians that I admire and listen to their podcasts weekly and have a lot of admiration for, and, you know, inspire me to do what I'm doing right now. It's just a dream come true. Like, what a great opportunity. I really hope that works out. How exciting would it be to go to Cologne for a couple of days and see the city, you know, maybe meet some fans, you know, meet Mateo, of course. I'm a big fan, and get to ask him a few questions about some interviews I saw him do. And yeah, he's you know, this great stepping stone, hopefully, into a group of comedians that I can, you know, make friends with and hopefully work with. And in addition to that, last and certainly not least, on this trip, I got a message on, what was it? I guess, did I get the DM? No. I had reposted this impression that I did of this German water sommelier. His name is Martin Riese. Shout out to Martin. He's great. I love what he does. And he's very funny and very good at what he does. And he very, very kindly duetted. So for those who don't speak internet so well, duetting a video means if you're just somebody watching a video on your phone, you might see a split screen, a video that's been recorded. And on the other side is this other person reacting to it or watching it. That's a duet. These two videos are playing together because one person is watching or enjoying that video with you. And Martin Riese duetted my video, which is doing kind of a goofy, over-the-top impression of him. Not really slandering him, but just sort of like mocking his... He's a very excited person about water, and it's just, you know, easy to target. And I'm just very lucky that he saw it and that he liked it and that he very kindly reshared it to his audience. And like years ago, he had been a guest on probably my most religiously listened to podcast, which is called Your Mom's House. Again, for my mom listening, I don't think this is for you. Pretty vulgar, blue humor. I don't recommend it. But it's hosted by probably my current favorite comedian since like 2017, Tom Segura. Again, Mom, I don't think this one's for you, but I think he's a really great stand-up comic. And I bought his book. I listened to his podcast. His wife is another talented comedian named Christina P. She has her own specials, her own career, her own podcast. They do this big one together called Your Mom's House. And years ago, when I was really, man, mamaybe it was even... I mean, 2016 was like 8-9 years ago, so I guess it was maybe like 2017 I started listening, and Martin Riese was a guest, because I thought at first when he was on the show that he was doing a character, because if you ever look up Martin Riese, he's a sweetheart, and he's very talented, so you'll know what I mean. He's eccentric, but immediately you're like, no, this is him, that's exciting. I thought he was doing a bit. I loved his episode and Tom's interview with him, and they were very funny together. And so, you know, now skip to like 7 years later, I'm doing this video, Martin shares it. Well, of course, Martin is followed by, I'm guessing also Tom, but he's followed certainly by Christina P. And I don't know how I discovered it. I think I saw that she had liked it. I think I saw that she had liked it or something. I forgot what the immediate trigger was where I went like kind of crazy. She had liked it, and then I went through my notifications to see, okay, when did she like it? When did she see it? That's crazy. Wow. My all-time, like, maybe not all, I don't know, it's very hard to say. I love Tom Segura, but like one of my favorite comedians and the co-host, also a great comedian, but the co-host of this podcast I've listened to for years, liked something I did. That's crazy that they saw me doing something. That's insane. And I looked through to see when it happened, and I saw that she followed me. That for me was getting the Diane Kruger follow was huge for me in Germany, but just like American comedian level, getting Christina P is pretty crazy. And I got really excited, and I wrote her a message thinking she'd probably never see it. But when I saw that she followed me, I wrote her a message. And you know, her podcast, they have their own community podcast language. It might sound weird, but you know, when you build a community, it's very common with podcasts or live streaming people or YouTubers. You know, if you build a relationship with your fans, you have your own language, kind of. A good example would be when people approach me on the streets, they might say quotes from my videos like, Ich liebe Sommer, Servus, Sportlich, you know, whatever, things like that. Or if I were to call my fans something like, I don't know, the royal family or whatever, if I were to say that, that would be like, you know, the language of that group. And so I wrote her this message with using a lot of the language from the podcast so she knows that like I'm a real fan. And I just said, I can't believe that you followed me. That's so kind. I'm such a big fan. It means a lot to me and, you know, hope you're well. And she wrote back like the next day or something and said that she loved what I'm doing. She loves like my TikToks and she has German family. I think, I don't remember if it was, I know her dad's Hungarian, but I don't know if it's like her, the grandfather or something. On one side of her family, she's got German. So she's interested in that content just by chance, by luck. I also saw that she follows Laura Ramoso, who we've had on the show before. And I thought, oh my God, that's such a crazy coincidence. And she said, you know, she started asking me questions. How long have you been in Germany? Why did you move there? I gave her the answers and made sure to mention like, hey, but you know, I go to the States for like 6 weeks every year around this time. And she brought it up. Well, let me know what your dates are this year. We'd love to get you on the podcast. We love to get you on the podcast. I just couldn't believe that. Now, I don't know for sure if she is specifically referencing Your Mom's House, which is a huge podcast, very popular, or if she means her own personal podcast, which is called Where My Mom's At, which is also great, huge audience, very fun. And I want to make it clear, I'm very excited to meet her too. So I don't know which podcast she means. I didn't want to ask. I didn't want to like annoy her. I don't want to write her too much or something, you know? And I just said, I will definitely know you the dates. Like, I will definitely tell you the dates when I know. That sounds great. And she sent back like, sounds like woohoo, you know? So time goes by. I'm on the trip. A few days go by. Finally, the day before we fly back or the day that we're flying back, I write her back and I say, hey, because it's true. This week we're supposed to get like our dates together for the flight. And I said, hey, I'm going to get the flights booked this week and I'll send you the info so you can tell me what days are best for you for me to come to Austin. They have a huge studio, a big film production podcast studio in Austin. So I would have to, wherever I am in the States at that time, I'll need to pick like a one day to probably fly up to Austin from Atlanta or something like in the morning. If it's from Nashville or Atlanta, wherever, fly on the morning, go do their show and probably come back that night. Or if it's cheaper, come back the next morning or something. And I said, yeah, I'll send you the dates and we can figure it out. I said, if you're still down, you know, because of course I want to do it, but I don't want to seem like the desperate little crybaby that I would be if they were like, nah. And she sent back like, that's awesome. What's your email? I'll put you in touch with Josh and we'll get the dates booked. I know Josh from the podcast because they always talk to the people in the booth and the booths are people who are editing and doing the live cutting of the video and they're the producers and I know who Josh is because I've heard his voice on the show and that's like also kind of a celebrity to me because I listen to the show every week and it's really crazy to hear her say that she's going to give my contract to Josh who's going to book the dates. That would be huge. So imagine this year, it's like a tour, a Mateo Lane support, maybe being on Christina P's podcast or Your Mom's House, which is a huge outlet. These all people being a part of this huge comedy community. I hope all this works out. And then there's still the chance that maybe the TV show thing works out this year. I had to put it all on the table for the podcast. I just can't believe this stuff. I just can't believe it. It's so funny how fast it moved for comedy as opposed to the years of trudging in the mud. With music, it's nuts. It's so nuts. It's so nuts to me. But yeah, I'll stop there. I'll save the funny Atlantic Ocean stories for the next one. Maybe Mo's on for that. We don't know. We know how that goes. Shout out to Matt. I think it's Brouillard. Shout out to Matt Brouillard from the United States, who got my face tattooed on his arm. You little weirdo, I love it. I sent him a care package today. He ordered some things, but I sent him a bunch of other stuff too as a gift. So thank you for that. I'm so glad you're a fan. I really appreciate that. I think that was all I really wanted to get into for today. I mean, it was a lot. Again, the Capriccio show, you can watch it in the show notes. There's the link. The live show I went through, there's the tour coming later this fall. I'll of course, you know, info the podcast first, because you guys are the most loyal people, and then Instagram after that, and then after that, probably TikTok, then YouTube, if, depending where you follow. If it's your first time listening, thank you for being here. I really hope you had fun. It was a very vulnerable, open show, long show today. Yeah, Matteo Lane, potential, Christina P. Moritz, congrats on the Grimme Prize nomination. Congrats to Johanna for getting greenlit. Congrats to Ify for getting projects on the table. It's going to be a really crazy year. I'm excited to see my family this spring, and maybe in May, my friend Mason Joyner comes to stay at the house for a couple of weeks. I really hope so. He's a wonderful person. Maybe the most talented actor I've ever known. Like, him and Matt Martinez are just, I have to talk about that another time. And then my parents are currently scheduled to maybe come to Germany in August, which will be really cool. And then later in the fall, a tortly dortly. Okay, now I'm repeating myself. So this show is all over the place. I'm so scatterbrained. I'm back in the studio and I love it. Long show, but guys, look, I love what I'm doing. I'm so happy that you're on this journey with me. And, you know, shout out to Ben Hoff for all the help with the show. Shout out to Moritz. Shout out to Johanna and Ify and, like, man, and Ali. And I'm just really, man, I'm so glad this stuff is happening. It's like surreal to potentially be seeing like my ultimate dreams. Like, I'm just scared that like I'm going to say all this stuff like, it's my dreams coming true. And then I'm going to get hit by a bus. You know what I mean? Like, maybe I'm just jinxing myself here. But I'm very grateful. And I hope that none of this came off as like braggy. It's just so crazy to talk about this stuff. I want to be able to talk about it, and I want to talk about it with people that understand that I'm just so, like, I'm scared, but I'm also excited, and I feel so lucky. There's so much luck that goes into all of this, you know? Like, it's so crazy, but it feels right, and I think I'm onto something here, and yeah. So, thank you, guys. Look, if you like the show, if you like me, you can always go support me. I have in my website. You can donate to keeping the videos, you know, keeping the video production going. If you want to contact me, there's information in the show notes. Watch the BR show. It's really cool. Yes, it's dubbed in German, but eventually I think we can get a copy with subtitles, at least in English, or maybe without the dubbing, which would be cool, but let's see. And yeah, keep your eyes peeled for tour info. And yeah, I love you guys so much. Thank you for your support. Thanks for listening, and have a great day. We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. Look out, baby, the saints are coming through, and it's all over now, baby blue. Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von Jordan Prince und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.